Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, we told you we would dive into the Russell Wilson trade and compensation, but really it's centered around Drew Lock. If we're going to be honest, this segment really isn't totally about the overall compensation that you got in return for that Russell Wilson trade. But look, Drew Lock was a part of that trade. And a lot of the conversation that we have heard surrounding Drew Lock since OTAs has started, and definitely around mandatory minicamp, is that, look, that Geno Smith is the one that has the most command. Geno Smith is the one that currently is in the lead of this competition, and Drew Lock is going to have to do an awful lot. Not meaning that, you know, Geno Smith is, you know, setting this incredibly high bar and he's ready to have an all-pro season himself, but more so that Drew Lock has really has to step his game up to surpass the knowledge that Geno Smith has, the comfortability that Pete Carroll has with Geno, to make them feel comfortable and give them the feeling that Drew Lock has earned that opportunity to be the Seahawks starting quarterback. And Curtis, this is very different from what we heard this organization talk, you know, or talk about Drew Lock in when they initially made this trade.
Absolutely. And when you make a trade where you're giving up a piece as valuable as Russell Wilson, as somebody who has accomplished as much as he has and is still considered one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, you expect to get a quarterback that probably will end up being your starter in return. I think that's just a fair assumption of what the Seahawks should have gotten in return for Russell Wilson. Now, if Drew Lock isn't that heading into the 2022 season, did the Seahawks get enough? And I am of the mindset where to be quite honest, I don't think I am going to consider this trade a failure or that the Seahawks got fleeced if Drew Lock is not the starter heading into this season, because this trade has always been made in mind of beyond 2022,
right?
2023, 2024, and in the future. If they don't get a quarterback with any of the picks that they got from Denver or what they might end up getting as their own pick next season, that to me will constitute a massive miss in this trade. If Drew Lock can give you any sort of competent play this season, then I think that is a win in itself, because look, his numbers in his career have been below average. He's what, 4-13 as a starter, something ugly like that, or 8-13, something like that. To me, if they don't get a quarterback with any of the picks that they get from Denver or of their own next season, then that to me is why I would view this trade as a miss. So, but there is still opportunity for that to happen.
Right. Well, I go back to this because, look, in cut number 21, this is back in March, Pete Carroll, you know, in his really his first press conference since the Russell Wilson trade, and then, you know, now going and previewing the draft, here's what Pete Carroll had to say about Drew Lock.
Drew Lock's a new quarterback coming into our program. Drew, we loved him in the draft. Our guys were thrilled about him coming up, going to take a shot. Maybe we could get a pick and get him. We didn't. He goes in his first year, finally plays his first five games, and he goes 4-1 in his first season, his rookie season. All the promise, all that you would hope to see, the numbers and stuff, show he's going to have a great run in his career. And the next 2 years didn't work out very well. He battled his tail off and competed his tail off, but it hasn't worked out. Is this a second chance for Drew Lock? Heck yeah, it is.
So, look, there was obviously a lot of optimism, a lot of excitement. Look, the second chance, the second opportunity for Drew Lock. And then go to cut number 23. This was a sentiment that the organization was definitely putting out there for everyone in regards to their faith and belief in Drew Lock and the narrative that, hey, the Seahawks need to go and draft somebody in the 2022 draft. Well, Jim Nagy pointed to here in cut number 23, like, look, Drew Lock, if he was in that draft, this is where he would have stacked up.
If you put Drew Lock in this class, in what he has in his tool bag, with his Division I basketball scholarship ability, with his arm, his ability to make all the throws. I mean, he would be maybe the top quarterback in this draft. So, again, I know Seattle wants to see what that looks like. You know, I mean, I really feel like he was a guy that wasn't handled right in Denver. You look back in his career, he was, you know, his rookie year, he went 4-1 down the stretch in December as a starter with a pretty average roster around him. And then you have the COVID year, and that's a whole tough situation.
So there's a lot of positive conversation around Drew Lock. The hype around Drew Lock that the organization was putting together, it really would be a surprise if Geno Smith ran away with this competition. And I think it would really put the overall compensation that the Seahawks got back and the decision to go and get players rather than more draft capital. Then you would look at it and say, well, gosh, if you felt like they didn't get enough at the beginning, it would certainly make you feel even more so if guys like Shelby Harris don't turn out to be, you know, a real difference maker for the defensive line. Drew Lock doesn't even start for you. You know, a tight end and Noah Fant, as talented as he is, what does he provide for this team? You really start looking at that and you wonder, you know, did they get as much as they could have?
I think my biggest disappointment, if Drew Lock is not named the starter, and look, if they don't address the quarterback position beyond Geno and Lock, if they don't go out and get Baker Mayfield or anybody like that, I think my biggest disappointment if Lock is not named the starter is that we're probably not going to get a ton of looks at him in that role during the season. Now, We know that there's probably going to be a short leash on whoever is named the starting quarterback, whether it be Geno or Drew Lock, simply because those guys have not proven it at the NFL level as a starter yet.
Right.
At either point of their careers. Geno being, what, this is his eighth season. Drew Lock, this is his fourth season. Neither one of them has been able to lock down a starting job at any point in their career outside of, you know, year. I think both of them started year two in their careers with their teams, but other than that, have been backups at any other point.
100%.
The biggest disappointment would be is if we don't see Drew Lock on the field hardly at all this season. I want to see him at some point be the starting quarterback, because you got to know what you have in him. You want to know what you have in him in order to assess that position going forward.
Well, Curtis, if he's not playing, you know what you have in him.
He tells you everything
you need to know, that he wasn't able to beat out Geno Smith. I mean, the other part of this that I agree with you, that Drew Lock doesn't necessarily, it is not the end-all be-all in terms of, if Drew Lock is not starting, then the trade compensation that they got was a total bust. I don't believe that at all, because you add the draft compensation. Charles Cross, you get a foundational left tackle, hopefully. Boye Mafe, a very talented, explosive edge rusher that hopefully finds, you know, his way onto the field. And then Tyreek Smith and Derek Young, we'll see what they end up becoming. But then you also have the 2023 first-round pick and the 2023 second-round pick that it was a part of that trade. So I overall, to me, it is about the future. And I think you said it perfectly, that it's about what the Seahawks are able to do with that compensation to find their future guy, rather than it is about Drew Lock and what he does this year, whether he starts or not. But it would be a disappointment, I would say, based off the fact that he was a part of this trade, that they did have, you know, high regard for him initially, and that Drew Lock just was not able to live up to the expectations or his talent, right? If that's how it ends up going. And obviously, you know, Noah Fant, Shelby Harris, those two guys need to provide something to this team, because that was the whole idea. We're going to get something for the future and draft picks, but also get back players that can help us win games now. And that's going to be an important part of this thing for it to come together that way, for us to feel good about how this trade played out.
So what is it from Drew Lock that you think the Seahawks absolutely need to see in order to feel comfortable about him being the starting quarterback? Now, we've heard Brock say, you know, be 70% accurate in practices, what have you. Is there anything else that the Seahawks need to see from Drew Lock to feel comfortable making him the game one starter against Denver?
What you need to see from him is you need to see him really have a great understanding of this offense, that you don't feel like you're being held back if you're Pete Carroll, Shane Waldron offensively, because you have a quarterback in Geno Smith that can run everything operationally, I should say, right? All the packages that they have, they feel good that Geno Smith can have command of that, he can run it, and everybody feels good. Drew Lock has to match that. He has to be able to come in and match that. And I think his talent overall and his playmaking ability gives him the edge over Geno Smith if he is able to do that. The other thing that he has to be able to do that he really struggled with in the last 2 years of his time in Denver is turning the ball over, Curtis. You can't turn the ball over. You can't throw interceptions. You can't throw mind-numbing interceptions that put your team in a bad way because, quite frankly, in order to win games this year, you're going to have to win them through playing a very, very particular brand of football, which is controlling the clock, time of possession, keeping things close, one game possession or one score possession type of games where the margin of error is razor thin. And you cannot afford to have a quarterback, as we talked about yesterday, trucks or trailers. You can't afford to have a trailer that is weighing you down to the point where your tires are about to burst.
Oh.
Okay? You can't have that happen. So you have to have a quarterback that's going to put you in good positions, keep you in the game, and not turn the ball over.
Well, and as we know, turning the ball over is the one thing that Pete Carroll absolutely cannot stand. It's all about the ball. Heck, we saw it a couple of years ago when the Seahawks were rolling offensively, and then all of a sudden Russell Wilson was throwing more interceptions than he had ever done so in his career. Pete Carroll put the clamps down on the offense, said, no, we're running the ball. We are getting back to what has made this thing work for as long as it has. And if either Geno or Drew Lock start turning the ball over, I imagine they will be very quick to put the other guy in simply because above all, whoever is under center for the Seahawks this season,
yeah,
Pete Carroll will make sure that the ball is not turned over.
That is 100% accurate, and that is going to be a major priority to Pete Carroll. Now, the problem is Geno Smith did a good job of this last year in terms of limiting his interceptions. If he gets a larger opportunity over the course of 17 games, I'm going to be curious to see how he manages that. But what you don't want to be in, Curtis, is in musical chairs. You don't want to be in a situation where, oh man, both guys are struggling and now we don't know who we want to, you know, roll with at, you know, each week going into these games. That would be worst case scenario. So, all right, let's transition this over to four down territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake, after listening to Jamal Adams' press conference yesterday, what did he say that should excite Seahawks fans?
Well, let's go to cut number five, because Jamal Adams, you know, one of the conversations has been about, all right, can this defense have the versatility to be able to put him in great positions? Well, Jamal Adams not only said yes, but he said it for everybody in the secondary group.
Yeah, I just think, you know, you can be so creative in so many ways, and not just me. You know what I mean? Quandre Diggs and, you know, Trey Brown and the Artie Burns is coming in, the Kobe Bryant. I mean, there's so many guys that can do so many things in the back end, and, you know, we can all, you know, do everything in the back end to where we can be creative. To where we, you know, give offenses problems, and that's the goal.
And Jamal Adams is hitting the podium there as he's talking, you know, talking with emphasis. But that's a great thing to hear, and I believe that is very, very important. When you talk about defense, it's not just about Jamal Adams, even though that's a big part of this, and the defense's success is getting the most out of him, but it's also being able to create different looks and to be able to put guys in great positions to where not only are you confusing the quarterback, that you have the versatility to do so, right? It's one thing, Curtis, to say, all right, well, we want to be able to confuse the quarterback and the offensive coordinator, give them these different looks pre and post snap. But if you don't have players that are versatile that can play in these different roles, then you're very limited as to what kind of different looks that you can give. But if you have Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams that can truly be interchangeable, Ryan Neal, who can play a lot of different spots, Artie Burns, who's playing inside at nickel and outside, if you can bring that versatility to the table, then that really adds an opportunity for Sean Desai, Clint Hurt, and the rest of that defensive staff to really get creative with the looks that they give pre and post snap, and can cause a lot of confusion and therefore a lot of havoc.
Second down. Jake, what rookie received high praise from Seahawks vets?
Well, this guy continues to keep getting praise and praise and praise. And Jamal Adams, he was asked about, you know, rookie corners and who is standing out. Cut number 7, he had his guy.
Very smooth guy, very smart, understands the game. You know, it's crazy. My DB trainer linked us up right before he got drafted. And, you know, I kind of hit him up just to give him some advice on, you know, what to expect and good luck in the draft and whatnot. And, man, here he is. So, you know, I was one of the guys that he hit up and as soon as he got drafted, and I was excited to see that. That's a hell of a pick, man. Definitely a steal.
They didn't say his name, but he was talking about Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant was the guy that he has watched and seen and has been very impressed by, and he's the one that consistently is getting high praise from Seahawk veterans, which is very exciting in regards to the overall competition, because as I've said before, when it comes to the cornerback spot, it may be a situation where you don't have a lot of experience there. But you want to see the cream rise to the top. And you want to see guys really take ownership of that position, Curtis. And when there's a competition, you want to see guys go out and stake their claim, go earn it, and not get a job by default, right? Whether it's, hey, we drafted this guy and we think he could work out, or hey, here's the highest paid corner that we have on our roster, therefore he's going to get the starting nod. You want guys to go out and earn it. And if Kobe Bryant is doing that every single day, that should make Seahawks fans very excited.
Third down. Jake, I was looking near and far for a Chris Carson update yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Did we get one?
Kind of. I think we kind of did. I mean, look, this is reading into somebody's tone and how they're talking about a certain individual. But Rashad Penny here, cut number 24, talking about Chris Carson.
You know, that's my best friend, really. You know, he mean everything to me. I try to communicate with him as much as possible. You know, I feel like he can bounce back from anything, though. The dude is tougher than nails. You know, just learning everything from him, you know, just made it easier for me to try to, you know, give the younger backs the same type of hope, you know. And you just hate to see a guy like that, but hey, I miss him though, for sure. I feel like everybody do too,
you know. Rashad Penny talking about Chris Carson in a way that, yeah, he misses him and it means that he's been away and he's rehabbing, but also kind of talking about him like that's just not going to happen and how bummed he is for Chris Carson and what he's having to go through. And so, obviously, I don't think this is a definitive update for you, Curtis, but just reading between the lines here of the conversation that you've heard from Pete Carroll, and not being able to give a definitive answer as to his health, you know, you hear, you know, conversation about Rashad Penny, it just does not look good, in my opinion. And I would be very surprised. I'm at the point, Curtis, where I would be very surprised to see Chris Carson activated and a part of this roster when it starts week one, and I hate to say that because I love Chris Carson.
Fourth down. All right, Jake, this is inspired by a headline we have coming up in the timeline. But if you notice that an item is misplaced in your household, A, where is it most likely to be found? And B, which kid is most likely to have put it there?
Jackson, for sure. Right now, it is the remote.
Oh.
The remote is, if you find it for the first, like the first time you go searching for it, it is a miracle. It is an absolute miracle. It could be in any room. It could be between the couch cushions to the floor. I mean, you have no idea, because right now, like kind of where our room, our front room, Curtis, is at, it's like, you know, it's an open floor. It's an open layout. So you have our family room. You have the kitchen. You have
dining room.
It's all kind of in one area. And he will just take it with him.
Dude.
No matter where he goes, he'll just take it with him.
Jackson.
Yeah, he's a little possessive of the remote. It's not a good thing.
So, we only have one kid, Willa.
Yeah.
She is that exact way with the remote.
Really?
Where we have had to take the batteries out of a remote that we don't use to use it as a dummy remote for her.
Nice.
To distract her so that we can use the actual remotes. We have an Apple TV, and if you know anything about Apple TV, it's that the remote is tiny.
Yeah,
you
it's can super hold small.
You can hold it in the palm of your hand.
Mm-hmm.
That's the entirety of the remote. she will take that remote and hide it anywhere. One time we found it in the bathroom behind the toilet because she had put it there. And, like, we had put her to bed, and we're looking everywhere for it, and we had given up. And, like, I'm in the bathroom doing my nighttime routine before going to bed. I look over. It is behind the toilet. I'm just like, you've got to be kidding me. How did you – how?
Well, we have the Fire Stick, right? Uh-huh. So it's not as small as the Apple TV remote, but it's pretty close.
Yeah.
Right? And, man, I'm telling you, it is one of the great frustrations that I have in this life of not being able to find the remote when we need it. You know, gosh, it's unbelievable. Oh, well, there's two dad problems there for you. You're listening to Jake and Stacey. You're listening to us on the Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. What we have coming up for you is the timeline, and trust me, we've got some stories that you're not going to want to miss.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
All right, welcome into The Timeline. We are taking you through all the top stories that you're probably seeing through your social media feeds. Let's get to our first story of the day. Well, this hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. All right, the Astros 2017 World Series banner outside of Minute Maid Park has gone missing, Curtis. It's gone missing.
Weird. I wonder who may have taken it. Jake, can you actually help me? I have a giant banner in my car right now that I'm trying to dispose of.
So, Curtis,
I'm not saying that I did the same thing. It's completely different banners.
Different banner. Yeah. Okay, so you just happen to have a large banner.
In the Houston area? That's none of your business.
That would have been impressive for you to be able to drive all the way to Houston and back.
I find it... I don't think this is a coincidence either, because it's the 2017 World Series banner. Maybe the most disputed sports title of the recent past.
Mm-hmm.
Why are all the other banners fine, but that one is not in place? Maybe the Astros took it down because they want to put a little more extra security around it, but
I don't think so.
Why are they missing the one World Series banner that we know everybody's got a problem with?
Well, that's the one that, honestly, you're right. It could be that. It very easily could be that. But I'm hoping somebody went down. If they had an opportunity to tear it down, I hope they did. I hope that the Astros are having to pay for a new banner right now.
Thrown onto the ground.
Yes.
Stepped on.
Yeah. Not 100%. I don't encourage vandalism in the slightest, but when it comes to the Houston Astros 2017 World Series banner, I'm all for it. I'm all for it. And if they put it up, I hope it gets stolen again and again and again.
It's like what people do with the Griffey statue bat. Like, that bat on the Griffey statue always somehow goes missing. Like, people just yank it off the statue or cut it off.
But, like, my question is why?
Yeah, exactly.
Why?
What are you going to do with a rod of
yes
of metal? Like,
and why the bat specifically? Yeah. Like, what part of that needs to be stolen or taken off? You're just being an idiot.
I'm just saying, whoever has possession of the World Series banner right now, do the right thing and continue to hold on to it, and don't give it back until they meet your ransom price. That's the right thing to do in this scenario. Not give it back. No. How much do you want it? Orbit gets their mascot. Start threatening their mascot.
Oh, yeah.
Orbit's going to get it unless you meet my demands.
Usually it never works out for anybody, and I'm sure that whoever does that's probably not going to be sophisticated enough to get away with it.
Ryan from the 253 says, it's an odd coincidence that Stacey's out sick when the 2017 banner goes missing. He says, obviously, I'm a suspect. Stacey, not so much.
Wow.
I think Stacey would be much more of a suspect than I would under normal circumstances.
No.
No?
No way. No way.
Yeah, maybe not.
But, like, honestly, this has me thinking. This has me questioning everything about Stacey, telling us, you know, what's going on with her, that she needs to take some time off. If we don't see her, you know, soon, I'm gonna start to claim that Stacey stole the World Series banner.
Rory,
no,
the 206.
She put Brian up to it.
Oh no! No one knows what he even looks like, so of course it's the perfect crime.
It is.
Rory
in
the 206 is stealing the sign they got by stealing signs.
Nice. Well I see. Played. I well see what played. You did there. All right, next story. This is pretty cool here. Gary Payton II applied to be the Warriors video coordinator at the beginning of the season before the team signed him to the roster. Think about that. That is crazy. Let's go to cut number 19. Gary Payton II talking about that.
I knew my chances, you know, they were telling me my chances was kind of low to making the team. So I was just trying to, they had a video coordinating job open and I was trying to, you know, get in that job, try to ask for an interview for that job just to stay around this team and, you know, be around the team and see if I can help. And, you know, you never know, a 10-day might pop up, you know, in between that video coordinating room. So, you know, I just stayed with it and, you know, next thing happened is they got a call saying we figured it out and, you know, I'm staying. So that was, no more video coordinating job.
But how far down the line were you of really thinking that you were going to be working in the video coordinating room, not being on the roster?
Oh, it came very, very real at the moment, you know. Like I said, they cut me, and I was like, next step was to go back to the G or, you know, try to stay here and be close to the team. So I try to stay here close to the team, and next thing you know, I'm getting a call saying, you know, you're a 15th man. So it worked out.
Wow. That's crazy.
That's a really cool story.
It is a really cool story, and obviously it just goes to speak to the fact that, you know, he loves playing here, right? Loves playing for the Warriors and loves being around the organization to the point where, you know, when he got cut saying, look, I am not going to go try to play for anybody else. I don't want to try to play for anybody else. If I can, I'm going to stick around you know, the organization as much as possible, and maybe that leads to me getting a chance to get back on the team or taking a new career path. I mean, it's pretty crazy, and much respect to Gary Payton II, you know, being one of those guys that obviously on that roster bubble and then finding a way to make himself part of, you know, an integral part of the team and obviously this NBA Finals run. I mean, really, really cool story.
Well, and you look at his numbers this season, it's not like he is the last guy on the bench. He played in 71 games this year, averaged 7 points a game, shot an incredible 61% from the field as a point guard, started 16 games for the Warriors, which is the second most games he's ever started in a season. I mean, before this season, the most games he had ever played in a year was 29. He played 71 games this year. So it's not like he went from applying for that video coordinator spot to like, oh yeah, we'll keep you on the roster just as a body to have. No, he has been a big contributor to what they've done this season. And God, just to be like, you know what? I think I'm done playing, guys. I think I'm going to hang it up. I'm going to take this video coordinator job. And the Warriors are like, on second thought, we might actually need you.
Yeah.
And now he's playing in the NBA Finals. I mean, it's
amazing.
It's really cool to see these games in the NBA Finals because Gary Payton, his dad, has been on the sidelines watching and being at every game. I mean, as Sonics fans, there's a connection there. I think it's really cool to see I believe they call him the Mitten. His dad's the Glove.
Yeah.
It's really cool to see that connection have success in the NBA. So that, I mean, I'm rooting for the Warriors, obviously, because I don't want to root for the Celtics.
Yes.
I hate the Celtics.
We've made that very clear, yes.
But to have that connection there, I think that makes it even easier to root for the Warriors in this final series.
There's no doubt. Last story here. All right. This is weird. In 1999, there was an episode of The Simpsons that predicted the sale of the Denver Broncos. Go to cut number 20 here.
Telegram.
Project Arcturus couldn't have succeeded without you. This will get you a little closer to that dream of yours. It's not the Dallas Cowboys, but it's a start. Drop me a line if you're on the East Coast. Hank Scorpio. Oh, the Denver Broncos!
I think owning the Denver Broncos is pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, explain to me why it isn't.
You just don't understand football, Marge.
I'll say this about The Simpsons. I've not watched a ton of episodes of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
I'm very familiar with what it is because it's been on the air for, 30-something years. They have an uncanny ability of predicting things that eventually come true. And we're talking like episodes that were filmed in the 80s.
Yes.
And coming true now. Who would have thought something as random as the sale of the Denver Broncos is something that would have been touched on in that show?
I mean, I don't know, but it is weird how it just these these coincidences happen far too often on The Simpsons for it just to be written off as something else. But also a lot
know?
Of people, a lot of
what
people,
know,
a lot of people also noting the fact that look, Homer Simpson got the Denver Broncos for a lot cheaper than $4.6 billion, which you know we all would.
He was gifted.
He was. I mean, wouldn't that be awesome if you were just gifted a team? It'd be pretty cool. All right, it's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up next, we got to talk about. All right. Text into the Mac and Jack's text line. We need to hear your level of concern now that DK Metcalf is missing mandatory minicamp.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, we asked you... And we want to continue to keep getting your text, so text it in the Mac and Jack's text line and with your feelings, 206-421-3776. What's your level of concern with DK Metcalf missing mandatory minicamp at the current moment? And obviously, this was big news that came out yesterday that's kind of surprised everybody because the conversation had been smooth sailing throughout in terms of DK Metcalf's commitment to the organization expressing their commitment to DK Metcalf. And I don't think that this, you know, stops that. I don't think it changes anything, Curtis, from that perspective. I do believe that DK Metcalf really, truly wants to be a Seattle Seahawk. The organization wants DK to be a Seattle Seahawk. So I don't believe that there is a massive rift that all of a sudden, oh my gosh, we got to think about DK Metcalf possibly getting traded.
Talks have broken down.
Yeah, I don't think that that's where this is at. What I do believe, though, is that DK Metcalf is saying, look, I'm serious about my stance. Whatever that is, whether that is the level of compensation that he wants or the timeline in which he wants a deal to get done. It's one of those two things, Curtis, that DK could possibly be upset about enough to want to miss out on mandatory minicamp, enough to create a stir like this and potentially accept, you know, 90-something dollars in
90-something
thousand dollars in potential fines.
And
yeah, you can write that check.
Yeah,
it's okay. I can write that check. I'll give the Seahawks $90. How about that? Look, so I mean, what is your level of concern regarding this situation?
I think my level of concern right now is probably at a 4, where I think I am still confident that a deal will get done between these two sides, and I think cooler heads will prevail by the time training camp rolls around. Because how often have we seen the Seahawks get to contract talks with a player at this stage and things completely break down? I don't think it's ever happened yet, has it?
No, I don't believe so. Not for the Seahawks.
If it has.
Not for the Seahawks.
If it has, text into the Mac and Jack's text line, 206-421-3776, because nothing comes to mind right now where the Seahawks have had contract talks with a player this deep into the offseason and something not get done in terms of like completely breaking down.
Yeah.
I'm taking my ball. I'm going home. I'm never coming back. Yeah. Cam Chancellor eventually got his deal. He held out in the 2015 season.
Yeah.
But he reported and was here for a number of years after. I don't think we're going to get to a point where we see DK Metcalf play his final year of his contract on his rookie deal. I think they will get something done prior to week one of the regular season.
Yeah.
Now, it could be a couple weeks into training camp before we see that happen. We'll probably see DK Metcalf in street clothes on the sidelines of training camp, potentially for a few weeks, maybe hopefully just a few days, or hopefully before training camp starts. They've done a lot of deals prior to the start of training camp, and the first day is when they announce it. So maybe that's something that happens with DK. But right now I'd say my concern level is at a 4. If we start to see, you know, some posturing, if we start to see some passive-aggressive Drake lyrics on social media from DK or from those close to the situation, then I think we start to raise concern. But right now I'm at a 4. Where are you at, Jake?
Okay, well, I'll give you the 787. He says, and I think this is interesting, if it's 25 mil or less that DK wants, not worried at all. If it's 27 mil or more, very concerned. And I do think that that is fair because we don't know what DK's asking price is. We've discussed the floor. We've discussed, you know, hey, around $25 million, maybe a little bit more, would be in the realm of what you could look at in terms of comping, you know, the most recent younger receiver, which is A.J. Brown. And he got, you know, $25 million overall, but in actual money, it's somewhere around $23 million. So 25 makes sense. But yeah, I mean, if DK is sitting there saying, no, I want to get paid like Davante Adams, I want to get paid like Tyreek Hill, I want to be around 27 to 30, yeah, then you've got some worries. Then you've got some concerns there. But I don't believe that they're that deep into the conversation yet.
Well, if DK wants to get paid that kind of money, I commend him for thinking that highly of himself. I mean, we all want to get paid more than we're making. That's no shock to anybody out there listening or shock to anybody in the NFL or anything like that. Like,
right.
That's just what it's like being in the United States of America. Like, you want to get paid more than you're making. And DK Metcalf, if he thinks that he is worth Davante Adams money, if he thinks he is worth Tyreek Hill money, tip of the cap to him. I don't think the Seahawks think that way. I don't think the Seahawks think he's not anywhere close, but I don't think he is at that level in their eyes.
Yeah, they don't want to be paying $30 million.
No.
They don't want to be at that level.
Because then that shifts not just a lot of what you're paying players, but it shifts what you have to do philosophically. And we know Pete Carroll wants to run the ball. How do you justify running the ball as much as the Seahawks want to do if your number one wide receiver is getting paid $27, $28, $29, $30 million? You're going to pay somebody $30 million to get involved in run blocking as much as they want him to, you know, not get the majority of targets thrown his way.
Yeah.
That is not something that I think would be justifiable at that price point.
Well, and not just a majority, but like a significant majority, right? When you're getting paid that much money, I mean, even at $25 million, I mean, that's no chump change there. I mean, you're looking for a shift in DK's production and also the leadership that he takes over and really, you know, starts to become that part of, you know, that important part of this team when you start to pay somebody $25 million plus at whatever position it's going to be, right? And so I do believe that my concern level is that if this doesn't settle down, that if DK Metcalf misses the entire week or that this conversation continues to boil over here in the month of June, then I will be concerned. If we don't hear, Curtis, any positive talks about DK Metcalf's deal in June, doesn't mean it needs to get done in June, but that, hey, things are moving forward, things are progressing, things are better than where they currently are right now, I will become concerned, because it's not to me a matter of whether this deal gets done week one. It's a matter of whether this deal gets done in training camp. You have to remember, everyone out there, that the two quarterbacks that are playing are not guys that have been starting.
Yeah.
New quarterbacks under center. You have to have DK Metcalf there practicing. You have to have him there being a part of the team and working with Drew Lock and working with Geno Smith and developing that chemistry. And if you're not, then that is a major problem to this team. It is. It doesn't matter if DK Metcalf knows this offense or not. It's about the chemistry with the quarterbacks that really, really matters. All right. Enough of that. We are going to go over to talk to our buddy, Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times. He's got all the details. He's done all the work on finding out what is going on behind the scenes with DK Metcalf. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be talking to Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times next.